I'm associate producer Jillian Parks. Come along and join correspondent Tom Wilmer for a conversation with Amy Brown, founder and CEO of Indianapolis-based Authentics. Brown asks, when you call your healthcare provider or insurance company, have you ever questioned why the call typically commences with an announcement that this call will be recorded? At Authentics, we harvest millions of those recorded customer interactions that are already occurring, whether via calls, emails, or chats. Through AI and natural language processing, Brown notes, we discern invaluable insights from those conversations to provide surgical insights about customers' frustrations and failures to receive prompt responses. We are in the business of humanizing AI. Next up is a conversation with Ting Guti, president and CEO of Indianapolis-based TechPoint, a greater good nonprofit venture capital firm. It was through Ms. Brown meeting Ms. Guti that the funding for Authentics was launched in 2018, and now the company has 120 employees and is rapidly expanding. Ms. Guti says, TechPoint is the growth initiative for Indiana's digital economy. We can accomplish that through expanding the talent pipeline, enhancing connectivity while elevating the industry. Amy Brown.
I'm the founder and CEO of a company called Authentics. We are an AI company whose mission is to help humans understand humans. Started the company in 2018, and we've been rocking and rolling ever since.
AI, the future is present. Talk to us about AI, because there are people that are scared of it.
Yes, and rightfully so, because there's a lot of misinformation and hype, right, about AI. You know, our take is that there is a responsible use of AI that can actually solve problems. Mm-hmm. Most of the focus of the AI industry these days are on how to replace human beings in some of the more menial tasks, maybe, or try to make our lives easier. For us, it's really about how do we help enhance the human experience and how do we leverage the best of technology to do that.
Give me a perfect storm example of a way, something you'd want to focus on.
Yes, we only work in the healthcare industry, and that's by design and intentional. Not that everybody, every industry couldn't use a solution like ours, but what better industry to focus on than one of the most broken industries in our country, mm-hmm. right? So we have an industry that is dominated by three core sub-verticals in healthcare: pharmaceuticals, payers, and healthcare providers. What's happened to all of us as healthcare consumers in this country is we are just stuck going around and around between those verticals to get the healthcare that we actually need for mm-hmm. ourselves, for our loved ones, etc. So what we do is we take in hundreds of millions of recorded conversations into our AI platform.
These are doctor-patient recordings?
Actually, no. So have you ever called customer service either for your pharmacy or your health insurance? Exactly. What was the very first thing you heard after the phone rang? Did you hear a message, an automated voice telling you something?
Yeah.
This call may be recorded. So we take in those recordings and we use AI to listen at scale for those companies that are facilitating those conversations. Uh-huh. And then we help them listen in an efficient, effective way to the actual voices that are happening every day in their organization. Mm-hmm. But when you get to a certain level in your career in corporate America and corporate healthcare, you lose sight of the people you're serving.
The perspective.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so it's easy to do. I've been there. I used to be in that industry, right? And so our whole mission is to help leaders have a data-backed way to connect to their customer and know the truth of what's actually happening in their customer journey, if mm-hmm. you will. And then once they know the truth.
Give me an example of the flags of that recorded conversation, a surgical way that you glean something that's applicable and usable.
Yes. So I don't know if you've ever spent time on a river. There's this phenomenon called the river eddies, where the water actually runs counter current and it creates this whirlpool effect. So when I was in the early days of starting Authentics and we were just getting our first bits of data in, I was noticing this phenomenon where patients were calling in over and over again to their health insurance company or their doctor saying, "This is the fifth time I've called. I'm still waiting on my prescription. My doctor ordered it and I'm still waiting and I need this to get better, or I'm still waiting on my mother's prior authorization request at her health insurance company, right? So I go home one day and I say to my husband, I'm noticing that there's this like booming theme in the data where people are having to cycle back over and over again to customer service to get what they need. And he, as a river whitewater rafting guide, says, well, that sounds like a river, Eddie. And so we created an AI model that's called the Eddie Effect. And we are listening to hundreds of millions of conversations at any given time and identifying, using AI, expressions of I'm stuck and I am not getting the care I need.
So those are flags that...
Those are the signals and the flags that help these companies know where to focus their attention to, you know, make it a smoother, more efficient process for both business and patient.
One thing to identify a problem that's already a prima facie issue, but how do you solve the problem, taking it forward?
Yes. So great question, because context matters. It's not enough to know that there is a problem. You have to know why and what to solve. And so our platform is all around helping provide context and the root cause of the problem. And so we have developed over time additional AI models that are paired with the Eddie Effect model that say, okay, it's your copay process or it's your claims process that is creating the substantial prevalence of the Eddies. Mm-hmm. And then we also, because we're all about storytelling and humans understanding humans, we have this ability in our product to actually clip and segment actual voices in a very compliant way. We're able to modulate the voice and de-identify the voices. Mm-hmm. We pull them together in a way that is like the illustration to the data point. So in the C-suite at these companies that use our product, they'll see a pie graph or a bar chart or a trend line explaining the Eddie Effect and what the root cause is. And then they'll hit play on the audio montage of five customers that contacted their customer service reps yesterday and were talking about this. And what we see in the boardrooms that when they do this is they go from their cognitive brain to their gut. And it's that special combination of speaking to people's minds and their gut, their heart, that we're seeing like create change in these massive, like we serve, you know, six of the top 10 pharmaceutical companies in the world. You know, those types of companies are changing their entire strategy based on just listening in a way that is data backed.
Even though you've identified the problem and it's obvious and you've given them theoretical solutions, the basis of the problem are not fixable until the system is fixed. For example, understaffing of physicians and support staff. And that's one of the reasons why your doctor does not get your prescription filled on your first call.
Absolutely. Yeah. You're referring to what we call the giant Eddie, which is if the three if the three sub-verticals aren't actually incentivized to work together to reduce the friction together, then we will not be successful in our mission. And so this year we are launching our first summit where we are bringing our clients from each of the verticals together to have a conversation about how do we use this data to get better with each other. You know, one of the things that Ting mentioned was in our DNA in Indiana is this understanding that we have to work across segments. We have to work across community, industry, government to make change happen. In essence, what we're trying to do at Authentics.
Even in kind of theoretical in your dreamland, another example of AI, a greater good use that you're proud of that you would like to develop.
We're focused in healthcare, and one of the things that is clear to us is that in these conversations, most humans think of call center conversations as being very transactional, but the reality is they are filled with the human experience, absolutely filled. And one of the things that we're noticing is that people talk about their social experience. They talk about social factors that are driving their healthcare decisions. They also talk about things that point to health equity issues. And so as we are solving some of the lower hanging fruit things in the healthcare system, we have an eye towards actually using data and massive amounts of customer voices to shine a light on where there are disparities in our healthcare system and where we can make improvements clinically for the lives of all folks in this country. And so I'm super excited about that, and that's definitely where we're headed.
Hi, this is Selena Scardina, and I'm with the Indiana Economic Development Corporation. So Amy, the background of your company and how it came to life is extremely interesting, and I see why you're narrowing in on the healthcare industry. It's a broad industry. I myself probably called my insurance provider 5 times last week for a question around an upcoming procedure for a child. So my question for you is, because Indiana and TechPoint have helped you develop and grow your business and your idea now to over 115 employees, why limit just to the healthcare industry? Because we know the human experience, especially after COVID, requires a lot more touch points and empathy and understanding. Why not expand to other industries? I'm curious what your kind of roadmap and vision looks like.
So that's a really great question, and one I get asked all the time. You know, never say never, but, you know, the reality is that staying focused in a specific industry has allowed us to grow so rapidly because we haven't become distracted by all the options out there for our product and our solution. And, you know, as AI has been evolving and developing, one of the key insights that you'll pick up if you research and do read about AI is that most companies, they do build their AI solutions using very publicly available libraries of data. Okay, like think about Facebook and Wikipedia and those types of things. Well, we wanted to do it very differently. We wanted our AI models to be trained very specifically using healthcare conversations. And instead of hiring data labelers from a third country or a third party, we decided to employ people within the healthcare industry who could listen to these conversations and not just understand the spoken word, but to also understand the context of the situation. And we believe being very vertically focused in how we train our models has made our AI more responsible and more accurate. And so if we were to expand into other industries, we would take that same approach. We would go into that industry, we would employ people who understand deeply that industry, and make sure that our AI was actually going to solve a real business problem.
Selena, you had mentioned earlier about you have a background related to call centers. Talk to us about how that intrigued you.
Yeah, so we talked about this earlier, that I've always been intrigued about this customer relationship, both sides of that equation in customer service and especially call centers. I think sometimes we have levels of frustration across all industries when we're dealing with customer service. But what's unique about this, the healthcare conversation sometimes is a little bit more, I don't want to say severe or, you know, in depth, but that might be a little bit different conversation than I didn't get my package today, right? I have a very serious question about my medicine or my upcoming procedure. I guess what I'm also very curious about, and Ting mentioned this, when she looks for companies that have this growth potential, Indiana kind of represents Amy. High performers that are busy getting the work done and they don't take the time to celebrate or talk about it or market it. I think we need to do more of that. I'm curious from Amy, why Indiana? Because you could have gone anywhere to expand your business, and how has TechPoint or Indiana helped you bring something that I think could revolutionize a really customer, or I should say patient engagement with the healthcare providers?
Indiana has been very good to me and my family, right? I started my career in state government. I was educated here in Indiana. I watched my father, he's still practicing, have an incredible career at a premier, you know, children's hospital as a physician. So it's been a really great state for me to have the foundation built within me and to be able to grow. I mean, at the age of 22, I was able to go testify before, you know, the House Ways and Means Committee. I mean, very, very incredible experiences at a young age. And Indiana is a great healthcare state. We've got Eli Lilly, we have Anthem, we have four major hospital systems here. And so it was a great fertile ground for me to really get exposure to the industry firsthand before, you know, taking the giant leap of starting my own business.
I'm always curious because I meet so many entrepreneurs across the state, and, you know, it's a very favorable state to start a business. And as I talked about with our host yesterday, we rank like number four of all states in the country for companies that will stay in business. I think 87% of our businesses a year later are still operating. But starting is probably my biggest question for you as a woman in business, but also how'd you get that spark to say, I'm going to take this risk and I'm going to do it here now and I'm going to do it in Indiana?
Yes, and it is a risk. And just to help provide some context on the risk in my life. So I was over the age of 40 when I got the idea. I had just had my fourth baby and my husband was a stay-at-home dad. I was the only source of income and insurance for my family. But something really magical happened at the age of 40 for me. I started to take stock of my life. I started to really think about my responsibility as a parent. I had many, many voices telling me that the responsible thing to do is to make my kids' lives frictionless and comfortable. And I started to really question whether that was the right approach for me. And so I got this idea. I started talking about it with my husband. And ultimately, I decided that my greatest responsibility as a parent is to demonstrate to my kids the work and the effort and the sacrifices that are necessary in order to pursue your dreams. I was telling my kids every day, follow your dreams, follow your passion, but I was not necessarily showing them the way. And so we had a conversation at the dinner table in which I said to the kids, Mom wants to take this major adventure, and we're all going to have to be all in. It means we're not going to have a ski trip this year. It means we are not going to go out to eat anymore for the next year. And Kevin and I, my husband and I, prepared to not have an income for a good 18 months. And that's what happened. And yet my children felt like they were part of the company, and they were, and they did make sacrifices. And I'm so glad I answered that call. It definitely has to feel like a call, because otherwise you'll just, you know, you'll just give up, because it is one of the scariest things you could ever do.
I have to say, Amy, I heard this yesterday and I need to share this with you. Somebody very wise told me yesterday, if you don't share your dreams with others, they can't help you bring it to life. And what I found here is because you shared that dream with someone, then you met the president of TechPoint, then she was able to introduce, like, here we share our dreams and they actually can become a reality, regardless of what that dream is. So super inspirational to listen to your story and the fact that now you're going to impact so many lives with technology as a leader, but you have this human component. So great work.
Amy, to learn more about your work, where would you direct us?
I would direct you to our website. It's authentix.com. Authentix, like the word authentic with an X at the end. And you'll find all of our social media handles and everything on our website.
Thank you so much.
I'm Ting Yudi. I serve as the president and CEO of TechPoint. We are a growth initiative for Indiana's digital innovation economy.
So, nonprofit?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Greater good.
Yes, it's impact work that attracted a lot of us.
Tell us about some of your successes and some of your things you're most proud of.
Great question. Wow. I haven't thought about that for a while. I've only been in this role for over a year, So I finally feel like I've gotten the sea legs under me. Now, prior to this, I had an almost 13-year career in venture capital, leading a lot of states in Indiana's venture investment activity.
Some of your most proud successes, things that you had to nurse so long and make happen, and you weren't even sure if it was going to come through or not.
That's how I feel like I earned on my own startup operating badge, even though for so many years I was serving in the venture investing role. I have a little bit of imposter syndrome, feel like I do, because I wasn't an operator. I wasn't like operator like some of the tech founders who were investing in. But having gone through the near-death experience, I went on for about 2 years.
Oh,
and
wow.
We came out stronger than we ever did. Mm-hmm. feel like I earned my startup badge, and now I can legitimately look people in, like Amy in the eyes. Hey, I've been there in your shoes before, and we did it, and you can do it too.
It takes a lot of stamina and fortitude and attitude, doesn't it?
Yeah.
To keep powering on when you're questioning yourself.
Yeah, particularly in your innovative role and startup role, and it's all the foundation you have really the one you built on through that mindset, through that fortitude, through the perseverance. Yeah, I feel like I have a lot of empathy now with the founders who are going through that process.
Yeah. Talk to us about empowering your existence and outreach and making people aware that you exist and in what ways you can help.
Excellent question. Maybe like many women, and sometimes we get a little humble. That's part of the reason I was attracted to this particular role prior to my venture investing finance role. I had such a great opportunity to work with all kinds of founders and business folks in different flavors. The ones that tend to be understated, they tend to be overachievers, my general experience.
Mm-hmm.
But to your point about storytelling, how do you make sure they don't get overlooked, not just on their success, but their impact on the greater community? It's important to me. So when this opportunity opened up, you know, going through a venture investing role into a nonprofit community building role, I know there's a lot of people have in their minds is, who? Why would you do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody want to be a sexy venture capitalist.
Right.
What's really attracted to me to this role is really not only the opportunity to work on issues beyond capital. Town has been the forefront of issues for many of us around the nation in this community, as well as we're experiencing more and more growth as a whole. But then the storytelling piece, part of our pillar strategy is elevating industry, including the storytelling, including, more importantly, telling the story not about us, but more importantly, the community that we're serving.
Let me interject for a moment, because you make me think, being a nonprofit, it's a greater good mission. So intrinsic in your philosophy would be radar on the lookout for ideas, for projects that are going to help culture and society and people.
I'm trying to tell my team, myself, it's less about us.
Mm-hmm.
It's more about everybody else.
Yeah.
And that's what we do through our storytelling, through our awards, through various mechanisms. It is about us, is we need to be able to tell the story in a credible and trusted manner. That's how we really get our authentic message out.
Mm-hmm.
We're on our way getting there. So it's beyond just the potential marketing piece. It needs to have authenticity and credibility.
So again, raising your flag and getting the attention. A lot of it is networking, isn't it?
Yep. It's networking. It's figuring out who are the ones, the key operators of the community network, and who has the right levers they can pull. They can help amplify the story of everybody. So grateful we have wonderful partners like the state, like other community organizations, and our industry partners who can help us do that collective work.
Give us an example of one of your most proud projects that you've nurtured.
Well, actually, I have quite a few standing right here.
Oh, wow.
I know you are part of storytelling. I also, back to the credibility, authenticity piece, I'm also a big believer in, besides the personal touch, the emotional piece, that we need to tell a story from data and insights. And that's how we build our credibility as an industry. So over the time, we not only have explicit strategy how we do the talent work and how we track venture investing here in our state of Indiana and how we intend to put technology to work in really critical industries in our state. So I'll leave as a leave behind. I'm only here about 16 months. We're just getting started in terms of building that authentic and data-driven storytelling piece.
What's a critical industry?
Critical industry are the industries contributing the most in terms of advanced industry, in terms of a cutting-edge industry of the future, but also comprise the most, contribute the most economic impact to our state as industry sectors. If you look at, think about the ones Selena may have mentioned, these are manufacturing, logistics, agriculture, and life sciences, and healthcare in general. So stuff Amy's working on, these are contribute the largest portion of the GDP for our state.
Back up to ag.
Yep.
Give us a success story there.
Success story in ag. Wow. Ag tech company in the smart spraying space using a technology. They recently got acquired by John Deere.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah.
That works.
Yeah, that does work. They're actually very much leveraging customer base we have in our community, the support network that both from a capital and service provider perspective, community organization like ours, really help them to a place where they're able to ink a very successful deal with John Deere. I will just maybe at the leaving behind, at the state of the technology sector, I sometimes remind myself, when we think about technology sector, we tend to think about the Salesforce of the world and Infosys of the world. In fact, I mean, those same recognitions are happening in our state. Do you know that Indiana has one of the 8 Salesforce towers in the world?
I just learned that.
You saw one of them. And Indiana also has one of the 6 U.S. Digital Innovation Center for Infosys. So these are 2 just primary examples. Our state has, through the asset base that was built over here the last 2 decades, how we're able to continue to build upon those, really become one of the leading technology providers in the world.
Another dynamic that intrigues me, in Sugarland, Texas, I did a bioscience story, and we're in a bioscience building now.
Yes. So that's an excellent point. So Indiana has a community, maybe compared to some other communities, we have had a very long and strong tradition in terms of a cross-sector collaboration of different communities coming together, putting big initiatives together. The fact that we're seeing the 5-story building here, almost brand new building, just got open about 2 years ago, is a perfect example in terms of converging the academic sector, public sector support, and private sector support to really put a key asset here, both in terms of 16 Tech Innovation District, that's 50-acre, really first of its kind in terms of it's not university-led innovation district. It's a part of public, private, and industry effort led by organizations like TechPoint. Same thing with the Indiana Bioscience Research Institute. Same idea, because a long time ago, I think community stakeholders and leaders here recognized, you know, private sector alone is not growing fast enough. Nonprofit, philanthropy, and public sector really has a role to play in terms of accelerating that growth. And over time, different folks come up with different strategies and really to get garner the support, both in terms of access to capital, access to sector growth resources, and we're seeing the outcome. And all of these take 5 to 10, these are long-term plays. A lot of the transactional work is still happening on the monthly, annual basis, but you look at why companies are attracted to here or even interested in continue to grow here is because they can access the physical, the intangible, and the capital piece they're looking for.
So logistics is an essential part of that equation, correct?
Yep. Logistics, really building that network of support system, whether it's capital, whether it's physical place, whether it's talent or customer base you can tap into. We at the state have really built out the different pieces of asset base over time. Now these are starting to really have density collectively. And then many of us who have the pleasure to do the community work, either at the nonprofit level or the state level, recognizing that, and we're trying to constantly get everybody to collaborate more and create that density, and it's working.
So how are we doing on time?
Perfect. I just want to make sure, get over, you know, you leave plenty of time to Amy.
Do you want an introduction?
Yeah. Amy is one of those founders. I remember my first interaction with Amy, and she was in the process as a woman founder, first-time founder. She had a terrific business idea.
Did you reach out to Amy?
No, she came through our pipeline. At that point of time, I've done enough venture deals. Like, I spotted it right away. She was one of those founders who does not necessarily come into the realm and try to wow everybody, but she comes in with strong results, which really played in her favor, I think, in the long run. That she built out her team, really going from just her to over 100, how many say now? 115 employees now in just 5 years. It's pretty incredible. You think about fundraising. A lot of times we get wowed by folks who can sell big vision and big ideas. That's how I really got to know Amy. She and I had breakfast, really know each other very well at the time. I said, you know, as a woman founder, you really came off as very understated. Not to say go out of your way, comfort zone a little bit. Well, because that's what investors are almost like looking for in that way, the balance between confidence and arrogance, and she's definitely on the understatement side. I mean, the rest of the history, then she went on to really become one of the best tech founders we've seen for quite some time, and her results really shows both in terms of number of capital partners that she's able to work with, and really the marquee capital partners around the country, and now building a technology solution piece that's addressing the healthcare challenge is very critical, likely to impact all our outcomes, all our lives.
To learn more about your world.
Yeah, you can find us at
techpoint.org. Again, we're a nonprofit as the industry initiative for Indiana's digital innovation. My name is Teen Goody.
Thank you so much. And I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from Indiana. We'll see you here.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station. I listen to WNYC in New York, and in fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.
It was a large room full of people, all kinds. And they had all arrived at the same building at more or less the same time. And they were all free. And they were all asking themselves the same question.